Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. If you've been around for a while in the feminist book club world, you probably know how much we love Scorched Grace by Margot Duahi. Well, our favorite nun is back with the second installment in the Sister Holiday mystery series, Blessed Water. So are you a fan of mysteries? Okay, what about queer mysteries? With a punk rock, foul-mouthed, chain-smoking, tattooed nun with a gold tooth and a heart of gold as the detective. The kind with exquisite pacing that you can really just devour in one sitting. In Blessed Water, Sister Holiday teams up with former fire inspector Magnolia Riveau as they discover the body of a priest in the Mississippi River in New Orleans. You can feel the clock tick as the story unfolds in three suspenseful acts: Good Friday, Holy Saturday, and Easter Sunday. And like us at Feminist Book Club, Sister Holiday despises sexism, white supremacy, homophobia, and institutional corruption, and she takes them on headfirst. She's a character who embraces her contradictions and sees her faith as one and the same as her queerness. Author Margot Duahi is also passionate about the reparative potential of crime fiction. Blessed Water is her queer alternative to copaganda that permeates this genre, and a healing balm to anyone who has been harmed by institutions like the Catholic Church. Blessed Water is out March 12, 2024 from Gillian Flynn Books, an imprint of Sando Projects. Yeah, that's right, Gillian Flynn, the author of Gone Girl, put her stamp of approval on this queer nun mystery series, and we are so glad she did. Did we also mention Mara Wilson narrates the audiobook? Yeah, Mara Wilson of Matilda fame. We're smitten, fall in love with this delightfully weird, deliciously gay, and devoutly righteous book series. Thanks to Margot Duahi for sponsoring this episode.
Hello, everybody. I'm Sally. My pronouns are she, her. And I am very excited to be chatting with you all today to discuss two of my favorite things, books and movies. Maybe three things, because I do also love the Oscars. I often have the experience where I'll be watching a movie that's based on a book, and I'll spend the whole time thinking, damn, I wonder what this book is like. So this year, when I was making my way through the nominees for Best Picture for the Oscars, I had coincidentally started with the films that are also nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. And so that thought was coming up a lot. Because I love a themed reading challenge, I decided to read the books that were the basis for those adaptations. And because I love critiquing things, I decided that I would also judge them for myself and decide which adaptation is the best. Now, of course, film is subjective. Our experience of books is subjective. These are all my opinions, blah, blah, blah. You know all of that. You're here for the hot takes. I'm here to give them to you. I'm going to go through each movie and book, rate them both, and then at the end tell you which I think is the best adaptation. How am I defining the best? You'll need to keep listening to find out. I will give you a fun fact that two of these four books feature a man who is repulsed by pregnant women, and that's that. I have to know that. That's information that lives in my brain, and so now it gets to live in yours as well. Let's dive in. I'm going to start with Barbie. The screenplay is by Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig. This, somewhat controversially, is nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, but it is not based on a book. It is based, or eat like a play or anything like that, because it could be adapted not just from a book. It could be adapted from like an earlier work. The Academy decided that this was an adaptation of previous characters. The characters are dolls. So this was like, you know, there was some drama. There was a kerfuffle. You know, there were things said about this when that news came out that it was going to be up for Best Adapted Screenplay instead of Best Original Screenplay. I enjoyed this movie. Probably gave it like 4.5 stars, maybe 4 stars. It's fun. It's colorful. I am sure that you've seen it by now. And that's all I'll really say about it, because there's nothing else. I have nothing to compare this to. So I don't know. I liked Barbie growing up. So, sure. Source material, A+. I don't know, you know. We're going to move on. We're going to move on to the actual ones that are from books. Starting with The Zone of Interest. The screenplay is by Jonathan Glazer. It's based on the novel by Martin Amis of the same name. And mostly this is an intimate look at the daily life and the work and the drama of a few Nazis living near a concentration camp. For this one, I'm going to start with the movie. As a film, it is beautiful. It is somehow engaging, even though it's very slow and very quiet and like not a lot happens. This is a very beloved movie. I totally get the hype. I loved the cinematography. I loved the score. It is so subtle. It is so good. And I think that something that's really interesting about it is that by taking such a close look at the mundanity of the life of this one well-off family living so close to the terror they're complicit in creating, it asks really interesting questions about how we become complicit in such a horrific act, and how something so awful can seem so normal. Like, how does the horrific become normalized? Sadly, of course, it is very timely. I have continued to think about this movie after watching it. As things continue to unfold in Palestine, I keep thinking about this movie. This is easily 4 or 4.5 stars. To say that this book is based, or that this movie is based on a book, I'm gonna say it's a stretch. We'll get more into that later, but for now, that's what I've got to say about the movie. Let's move on to the book. Friends, I did not like this book. I didn't like it. Originally, I gave it like 2.5 stars, but I might bump it down. As I was preparing for this episode, I was like, do I hate this book? I might have quit this entire experiment and scrapped this episode if I hadn't already read 2 of the books before reading this one. But by that point, I was like, okay, well, I'm in. So let's keep going. Supposedly, the book is a love story set in a concentration camp. And like, okay, sure, I guess. It's well written, I suppose, but I've personally found it quite boring. I simply do not need to be inside the minds of not one but 2 Nazis, even if one of them is like a nice Nazi or a reluctant Nazi or whatever. People seem to enjoy this book. It was critically acclaimed, so maybe this is just a me thing. I didn't like it. On top of being boring and just kind of horrific, it hates women. I mean, I'm sure the author didn't hate women. but it's just, I didn't think that this did anything interesting. There is a notable scene about 75% into this book where the commandant recounts a story of a man who stabbed his wife 137 times. And he's reflecting on it and is like, people seem to find that excessive. But he, and I quote, immediately saw the logic of it. Cool. That's great. So I didn't want to be inside the mind of that man. This is not the nice Nazi. This was the horrific Nazi. There were 2 Nazis that we were in the minds of. And this one was the worst one. By that point, I just needed the book to be done. I was so ready for it to all be over. I almost DNF'd it multiple times. In case you couldn't already guess, this is one of the books that features a man who's repulsed by pregnant women. You can read what you want, but if you were my friend, I would tell you to skip it. Okay. Check content warnings for this, really for all of these books. They all deal with a lot of not great topics. This one, obviously, genocide, anti-Semitism, death. There's infidelity. There's emotional abuse. Oh, God. I just did not enjoy any part of this experience. The real feat here is that this book turned into that movie. But again, we'll get into it later. I'm going to go in the order of like book that I liked the least to the book that I liked the most. I meant to preface that earlier, but we're here now. We're on board now. The next one is Poor Things. The screenplay is by Tony McNamara. It's based on the novel of the same name by Alistair Gray. This book came out in 1992. I find that fascinating. Part of me thinks it should have come out like way longer ago, and part of me was kind of surprised it didn't come out more recently, which I guess is a testament to this story. This one is hard to discuss without spoilers, because what you might consider a spoiler depends on what you already know about this story. There were things that were not included in the original trailers for this movie. In the movie, that first reveal happens quite early on, but in the book, it doesn't come in until like a good portion has already happened. If you want to read this book or watch the movie and you don't want to know anything going into it, maybe skip forward like 30 seconds as I give the synopsis, but I won't have spoilers in the main discussion. So, synopsis. This is described as Frankenstein meets Jane Eyre. It tells the story of Bella, who has the brain of a toddler in a woman's body, after an experiment by the scientist Godwin Baxter. It's about discovering the world with fresh eyes, getting a second chance at life, and exploring liberation and agency. This time I'm going to start with the book, because sadly I did not love this as much as I thought I was going to. I think I hyped this up too much in my mind, because it is an all-time favorite book for a couple of people that I follow. I've heard nothing but good things about it. But sometimes I was bored. I am so sorry. Sometimes I was bored. That said, it is an interesting look at like what it means to be a woman with agency, who gets to tell the stories of women, which I have thoughts about, whose narrative gets believed. It's complex. It's layered. I really enjoyed a lot of aspects of it. I will not give away the last chunk of this book because it is worth discovering for yourself. I'll just say that your eyes might start to glaze over in the like very final section in particular, but there are a couple of key details in there that are important to the overall story. I'll leave it at that. I ended up giving this 3.5 stars, but like reflecting back, I think I might bump it up to 4. I think it's worth reading. I just have a lot of thoughts that I'll share a bit more about after talking about the movie. This film is stunning. Okay? It's giving production design. It's giving costumes. It's giving makeup. Okay? The acting is amazing. It's quite funny. The film, sadly, I think, loses some of the commentary and the politics of this book. I didn't know that at the time. For all of these, I saw the movie before reading the book because I wanted to have sort of the same type of experience for each one. So I didn't know that going into it. I didn't realize that the source material was so like politically inclined. But after reading the book, I was kind of bummed out. That said, it's worth noting, because by all accounts, Gray was a socialist and a feminist, and that shows up in the book, in ways that it just doesn't show up in the movie. I also think that the movie, I thought this even before reading the book, but I think this movie focuses a lot on sex. This is one of the main critiques I've seen of the movie. My critique of it isn't so much the amount of sex, because to be perfectly honest with you, I'm a horny bitch. I'm a slut. I'm fine with sex in my movies. My issue with it is that the movie seems to rely on sex too much as sort of a showcase for women's liberation. And I just found that kind of uninteresting. And when I read the book, I even sort of thought maybe it was missing the point a bit, because the point isn't that she, and there is a lot of sex in the book too. She, you know, her sexual liberation is part of the book as well. But I think it's handled differently, and it's, there are other ways that she's exploring her agency and what it means to be like a free woman or whatever in Victorian times. It's not just about the sex. So I just thought it was kind of cheap. It was like an easy way to do that. And so I don't know. I don't know. I'm so conflicted. honestly, I'm still sifting through my thoughts on both the book and the movie. I keep changing my rating of them. I keep finding things that I like about them and then things that I really, really do not like about both. Discussing these two things, the movie and the book, it could probably be its own episode. So we don't have the time to get into that right now. I still have several other things to get through. I also want to note that, and maybe this is coloring things for me, I don't know, but it is also worth noting that this story that's supposed to be about a woman's liberation is primarily the work of men. The book is written by a man. I mean, you know, an ally and all, but he's a man, or was a man. Rest in peace. The screenplay is written by a man, and while Emma Stone is a producer on the film, it is directed by a man. I'm sure all these people have the best of intentions. I don't know. I'm conflicted. But, you know, worth watching, worth reading, if you care to. Here we've got content warnings for suicide. So much body horror. The book has a lot of medical content. I guess the movie does too. It just really kind of struck me in the book. I believe there's discussion of miscarriage and or abortion in the book. I don't remember about the movie. This is also the other book where a man is repulsed by pregnant women. Enjoy. Next up, we've got American Fiction. This screenplay is by Cord Jefferson, who I believe also directed it, based on the novel Erasure by Percival Everett. This is the story of a Black author and professor, Thelonious. His nickname is Monk, and he gets criticized for his books not being Black enough. When he needs to start financially contributing to the care of his mother, he ends up writing the type of book that he hates, and much to his dismay, it becomes a hit. This movie, I loved this movie. It gets 4.5 or 5 stars from me easily. I laughed. I cried. Quite literally, I did both of those things. This cast is phenomenal. Some highlights. The way that they include Monk's manuscript of the hit book into the movie is so good. It was so well done. I loved the ending of this book, of this movie. It is different from the book, but I was very much here for it. This was probably the most entertaining movie of the bunch for me. It gave me a lot to think about, not just about the story itself, but how we view characters, how we view storytelling. I just really loved this movie and the book, but we'll get to it. I will say I had the experience while watching this of being sometimes the only person laughing at the theater. I was in a theater that was predominantly older and white. I think besides me, there was only one other Black person in the theater. We were too far apart from each other, so maybe she was laughing. I don't know. But I felt like I was the only one laughing sometimes. And then there were also times when we were all laughing, but I was questioning if they were laughing with the movie or at the movie. Like, were they laughing at the expense of Black experiences or stereotypes or caricatures? I don't know. Some people hate having that experience or that feeling, and it can be triggering, so I did want to mention it. But I loved it. There is also, because this is a feminist podcast, there is one change from the book to the movie that I didn't particularly appreciate. I won't get into spoilers, but I'll say that it has to do with the political climate surrounding abortion access. I can definitely understand, I guess, why they didn't want to go there in the movie. And again, I watched the movie first, so I didn't even know that that was a thing that happened in the book. But having read the book now, I do wish that they hadn't changed that. I wish they had kept it in the movie. Again, I don't know. I get it. It's a weird time. But just like, if you're going to go there in all these other ways, just fucking go there. I say. That's my opinion. Shifting to the book, something to note right away here is that there is a book within a book, and that the book within the book is not good. It is very, very bad. But that is the whole point. It's supposed to be bad. So I chose to bear with it. I chose to keep reading. It's like, I mean, it's not even half the book, but maybe like a third of the book or a quarter of the book. I don't fully remember, but it's a significant enough portion. I kept waiting for it to be done. I didn't think we were going to get the entire book that Monk has written within the confines of the book that Percival Everett wrote, you know? But we did. We got the whole damn thing. Start to finish. And Like I said, I just went with it. I wanted to have the experience that the author intended. I would not blame you if you skipped it. But again, it is part of the point that that story is bad. It is poorly written. It is, my God, it is just awful. Monk's story itself, you know, back to zooming back out to Erasure, it's really compelling. It's really sad. It is funny at times. I loved all of these characters. I mean, except maybe the white people, didn't really care about them one way or another. But you really feel for Monk and his, like the people that are close to him, you really feel for them. And for the way that he's exploring the past and how he's seen by other people, even those closest to him, it's just really touching, I found it. And of course, the story has a lot to say about what types of work we elevate, whose voices we elevate, what we expect from authors that aren't cishet white men, and maybe not just authors specifically, but creators and artists in general. Even though this focuses specifically on a black man, and that is its own unique experience with his own set of stereotypes, it is easy to kind of extrapolate from there and consider other identities as well. I loved this book. I gave it 4.5 stars. These are both worth it. In terms of content warnings for the book, there is a murder. There is also death in both. There's dementia or Alzheimer's. I forget exactly which one. There is homophobia. So those are some of those. And friends, we are wrapping up this portion before I get to my rankings with Oppenheimer. The screenplay is by Christopher Nolan. It is based on the book American Prometheus, The Triumph and Tragedy of J. Robert Oppenheimer by Kai Bird and Martin J. Sherwin. Friends, the biggest plot twist of this entire experience is that this massive biography about a man that I had no interest in learning anything about, not even after watching Oppenheimer, was my favorite book of the bunch. I was blown away. As the title says, it's about the triumph and tragedy of Oppenheimer. He is known as the father of the atomic bomb. This movie primarily focuses on two different time periods in Oppenheimer's life, the events leading up to creating the atomic bomb, and a private hearing that happened about a decade later, I think, where his security clearance was challenged and ultimately taken away. It also looks more closely at a third storyline that I'm not going to get into because it might spoil some things in the movie. I didn't know anything about this man's life or the events like particular to his life, so I didn't know what was going to happen with the third storyline. Can you spoil history? I don't know, but I'm going to try not to. This movie is 3 hours long, and boy, you feel it. You feel it, but I still enjoyed it. It's probably going to win Best Picture for good reason. To quote Harry Styles, my favorite thing about the movie is that it feels like a movie. It is really giving. The costumes, the acting, the production design, the sound, the score, all of it is really, really good. It is worth the watch. You know, take a couple breaks here and there. I gave it 4 stars. The book starts before Oppenheimer is even born and goes beyond his own death with the death of his daughter. So it covers way more than the movie. It also gives a lot of background information on some of the key people in his life. So it's a lot of information. It's so many people. It covers so much time. It gets into details I really did not need. And yet it is so well written that I was engaged basically the entire time. This audiobook is 26.5 hours long. I will admit I did speed it. I sped that up. But still, I enjoyed almost all of those minutes. I will say that I do love nonfiction. I love history in particular. So that's certainly part of what's happening here. But I still just wasn't expecting to enjoy this book as much as I did. There were moments, y'all, where I was even eager to get back to the audiobook after work or dinner. That doesn't happen often. Well, it doesn't happen often in general, but certainly not with a nonfiction book, even when I enjoy them. So maybe this book was written very specifically for me. I cannot explain it. I gave it 4.5 stars, but I might bump it up to 5 stars, to be perfectly honest with you. But maybe I'm in the minority. Maybe that's just me. I don't know whether or not to recommend it. Content warnings here for anti-Semitism and suicide, but maybe it's not suicide. There's question of that. We don't know. If you will indulge me here for a second, I have a series on the podcast where I pair two books together on a particular topic. And I have to say that American Prometheus would pair perfectly with The Girls of Atomic City by Denise Kiernan. It is an obvious pairing, perhaps, but I have to mention it. If you watched Oppenheimer and you thought, where are all the women? Or even, where is all this uranium coming from? The Girls of Atomic City will answer those questions. Okay, thank you for that. So those are my rankings of the books. What about the adaptations? These movies are all great. The screenplays are all really good. So I kept changing my mind about how I was even going to evaluate the adapted part of adapted screenplay. Is it the most entertaining screenplay, the truest adaptation of the screenplay, the one that does the best job of translating a book into a different medium? So like picking out the parts that work best for the big screen. Ultimately, I decided that a mix of all three is what should make something the best adapted screenplay. Of course, I cannot imagine that's the criteria that the Academy uses, because I'm doubtful they even watch all the movies, let alone read any or all of the books. But it's my criteria, and I'm the one presenting this to you. So there. So with that in mind, The Zone of Interest immediately is out of the running, because it isn't even remotely the same story. It's the same setting, and one of the main characters is the same, and that's about it. It maybe should win the award for the most improved, but I cannot say that it is the best adapted screenplay. Poor Things also loses here, because there's a major, major part of the book that is missing from the movie that, quite honestly, I think is what really makes the book so special and is a huge part of the point of the book. Or of the story. So while the movie itself is wonderful, it doesn't win my personal award for best adapted screenplay. Oppenheimer comes close. It does a fantastic job of synthesizing a man's entire life into sort of the key moments that defined his legacy. And it is surprisingly faithful to the source material. I was surprised while reading the book at like looking back at how many moments in the movie were described basically like word for word as they were depicted in the book. So like, way to go, Christopher Nolan, you really did that. I'm dropping Barbie in here next because I do adore this screenplay, but it's sort of hard to put it at number one because there isn't anything for me to base this adaptation off of other than like playing with Barbie dolls. So I guess that I understand why it's an adapted screenplay rather than original screenplay, but for the purposes of this experiment, it can't win. And that means that my winner for the best adapted screenplay is American Fiction, based on the novel Erasure. It's a very faithful adaptation in that it conveys the themes of the novel like really, really well. So it doesn't lose any of those, like in something like Poor Things. And even if it leaves some things out and it changes other things, it's still, I think, a pretty good adaptation. More importantly, most of these changes, minus the one that I previously mentioned, enhance the story for a different medium and ensure that the pacing really works for a movie, because I could see how it would drag if it was just a straight, you know, one-to-one adaptation. It's also super entertaining, and even though it's heavy at times, it is quite funny. So that's my winner. There it is. If you're listening to this episode the week it comes out, we'll find out this Sunday, March 10th, who wins the Oscar. If you're listening in the future, you already know, but I hope you enjoyed this anyway. As always, you'll find links to these books in the show notes. Thanks so much for listening. Till next time, happy reading.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
Well-read woman is a